okay.
Well, I mean, the story in the first Titanfall was so solid, you know.
There was like a guy who was Australian, and he was like real mad about stuff. Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. You'd think we would have just recorded that intro by now. And
no,
just
we got
it.
We're trying to keep it authentic here.
This is episode number 243. Like, we could pick it up right there. This is episode number 243. I'm your host, Matt. We could just inject the 243. Like, this is episode 243. And I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
I'm Ash.
You know what I really wanted, and I've brought this up before, is I want, like, Super Mario Brothers Super Show style rap lyrics over our theme song to, like, intro.
Yeah. Do it. Be like, what's stopping you?
It's the Nerd Appropriate Gang, and they're here to say, you know, it's like, because it's real 80s campiness.
Like Sugar Hill Gang style rapping?
More like 80s inspired, because it was all kind of weird back then, you know?
Yeah, it was weird back then, you know.
We're Rated NA, and we're here to say,
oh boy,
that already rhymes, so it's going okay.
See, good. Perfect.
Now Scott can actually make it. He just needs to chop that up and weave a little editing magic.
Yep. Make it chopped and screwed at, Scott. That's all you got to do.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Let's do the rundown.
This week on the show, we're going to talk about the Titanfall 2 stress test thing, whatever you want to call it, some early impressions, and then I've been playing Deus Ex Go on mobile, and then I will review the game Armacrog, which is a game from the creator of Earthworm Jim. And of course, we have a bunch of news to talk about and what we've been up to, so there you go.
Lots of news. It's a news heavy week.
Yeah, news heavy.
It's a news heavy week. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this episode is brought to you by Loot Crate. Luke, I don't know what's going on with me tonight, guys.
Luke.
It's Scotty and the douche.
I do improv on Sundays now at like noon, and I think it just puts me in like a weird headspace, and I'm just, so anytime we record on Sunday, this is what you're gonna get.
That's great.
This episode. Oh, Jesus Christ!
We're keeping all of this.
Loot Crate's theme in September is speed. Looking for high octane, adrenaline pumping theme? Look no further than Speed, featuring some of pop culture's quickest characters and vehicles. This month, get unique loot from Arrow, Flash, Batman, Battlestar Galactica, and Iron Man 2. Don't forget that each and every crate comes with an exclusive T-shirt in your size, as well as a collectible Loot Crate pin. So, did you write this ending? So, get Fast and the Furious with September Speed Crate. Did you write all of that or just the end of it?
I wrote about the second half.
Okay, that's what I figured.
I think you should reach out to the Loot Crate folks and help them write their copy.
Yeah. I can always kind of pick where it transitions, though, to Ash
when
a little bit.
When it gets pretty bad, it's when you know that I wrote it.
So head over to lootcrate.com/ratedNA, use the code ratedNA, and get a 10% discount, and help out the podcast in the same one fell swoop. And that's very nice of you guys. And Scott, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Well, I think we all played a little bit of Titanfall 2 this past weekend, which is cool. And I started watching Jessica Jones, which is, I know I'm late to the party, but I don't know anything about Jessica Jones, so all of it was a surprise to me, and I just think that it's the way that
did you finish it?
No, just the first episode.
Oh, you're still the first episode. Okay, cool.
Yeah, super late to the party, but I want to talk about the music. I thought the music was like, the score for the show is like really incredible. Even more so than Daredevil, I think. I just think that it kind of has like a cool kind of like detective vibe to it, which I really like.
And
I was just really surprised, because I didn't, like I said, didn't know anything about Jessica Jones. And so, like,
I mean, you're not really alone there. I would argue probably most people don't know anything about Jessica Jones.
Most,
that's an unfair thing to say, but she's not like, you know, a top level comic book character. Marvel does like an incredible job of taking.
I mean, she was like, I think like 2004 maybe was the first year she was around. So
I just thought that was like good tension, you know, in the first couple episodes. It's really like I'm hooked. So that's
for sure.
That's awesome. Still playing Watch Dogs, which is, I don't know, kind of like mindless fun. That game has some of the worst, you know, grindy achievements that I've ever seen in a game. So it's more like a playground where you just run around and have fun and blow stuff up. So that's cool. And then I played the game Armacrog, which I will talk about later on in the reviews. And I don't know, that's about it. It was pretty light week for me. How about you, Matt?
I too played Titanfall 2. I think I might be the only one who played both weekends. Did you guys get on the weekend before?
Did not
or no?
get on the first
no, I did
weekend.
Not. Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that a little bit later. My wife and I started re-watching Stranger Things.
Okay.
Yes.
I think I told you guys both this, but like I bought the soundtrack on. I finally broke down. I don't like buying things on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to get by Rough Trade because I think they have it on vinyl, and I was going to buy the vinyl, and then like they have download codes inside of it usually. And I was like, oh, I'll do that. And I hadn't gotten over there to get it, and then I just really wanted to listen to it on Friday for whatever reason, so I picked up the soundtrack, and I've just been like, I think I listened to it 4 times through. It is the greatest work music ever created.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's because it's just so, it's like chill. I even set it as my alarm in the morning too. Like my alarm randos out the soundtrack and like plays one of the songs and I wake up. So I might be a little too addicted to that show, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's all right.
There's nothing wrong with that, man. It's so good. It's just
it's really good.
Good.
The second watch through, have you done that yet, Ash?
I'm almost done with the second. I'm on like episode 6. So
when you stop being sort of like amazed by or shocked by everything that's going on in the show, you start to like really notice a lot of stuff about it, if that makes sense.
Like holes or
no, not holes. No. Like you start seeing like where they were tying things well before.
Oh
you
yeah, absolutely. It. There's like, a lot of nuance and the thing that's great is it's, you know, it's set in the '80s. So you start to notice the set dressing and you start to notice just the authenticity of it all. And it's like a little time capsule. That's just really, it's kind of warm and fuzzy, you know?
There's a scene where they're all in the whole student body is in the auditorium at one point, and that, you know, for whatever reason it might be. And they cut to a scene where they're all like climbing down the stairs, which felt like, it's so weird that even the little things remind me like perfectly of what my childhood felt like when I was growing up, you know, in the burbs.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But like, as stupid as it is, I even noticed that their like shoes are perfect. Like they're like, they nailed like every single, which would seem like a hard thing to pull off is like a bunch of 80s shoes, but they're all like old chunky Reeboks, and I guess there's retro stuff now, but they all looked like perfect. Everything was, it's done very well. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
I think it's like on second watch, I've changed a little where before I would say it's not a perfect show, but I really enjoyed it. And now I still don't, it's by far like, I don't know that a perfect TV show really exists at the end of the day, but like, it's so much more nuanced than I think I gave it credit for on the first watch. Like there's so
the
much
performances,
more
performances, man. Oh yeah. My God. I told you guys on Slack, but Millie Bobby Brown, who plays Eleven's coming to a con in Orlando, like a smaller con. And I'm like, I'm so excited to meet a 13-year-old. Like I'm super, super excited. Like I cannot wait to meet Eleven. She's just like such an incredible actress.
Yeah.
So good.
She's British too.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm glad you put some context to that statement. You didn't just leave that. Yeah.
For the quality of her acting skills.
Yes.
No pedo.
Oh boy. You don't have to say no pedo.
Yeah,
we're all going into it assuming no pedo.
No pedo, guys. No pedo.
Oh, geez.
Jesus Christ. So I did a bunch of stuff this week. We went out, Melissa and I went out a few times. Wednesday night, I went to a show at UCB called Night Late.
Okay.
And it is an hour-long show where they bring a comedian in, and then they build a talk show around that comedian. So it could be anybody. And this week was Sasheer Zamata from SNL.
That's awesome.
Who I've seen a couple times randomly recently doing stand-up and stuff, and she's hilarious in stand-up. And she had like 3 friends out as like a panel, and she brought out this guest that she interviewed, and she did a bunch of kind of wacky things with the audience where she made us all get up and like sit down by height at one point. Like it was weird and funny at the same time. But it was really, really fun. I had a really good time going to this like crazy fake late night show with a comedian in a tiny little you know, 100-person theater kind of
thing.
That's
awesome. That's great.
It was really cool. Yeah, and then we went to a couple other improv shows, some very much not worth mentioning, and then so that was pretty fun. And then I wrote this down just as a side note because it's been wildly successful in the house, but we've been using this online site.
You've been using the internet?
We've been using the connected internet to find an online website at www.
That's incredible.
But we've been using this website / app type thing, or I've been using it to meal plan. Have you guys ever like actually meal planned before?
No, but we probably should.
Yeah, so in New York, you can kind of eat out very easily. Like it's even easier than I would guess. It's like the equivalent of like getting fast food on the way home in Florida is like any meal you want in the world in New York. Like you can just think of a thing that you are currently hungry for and it will arrive at your house in like 45 minutes. So
crazy.
It's like super easy to eat out here. And then we tend to, and then our budget like explodes and, you know, we get fat and everything else. Like it just kind of, everything just goes over top, you know? And, so I grabbed this site and I started meal planning where it'll like put together a menu for you for the week and kind of like tie foods together so that you're not spending like $1 million, you know?
Okay.
And then preparing and cooking it like a night or two out, and it's been going super well. And I was going to recommend it to you fellas. You should try it.
I will definitely check it out.
You save a bunch of money. I won't give the site out on air because they should pay us money for that. But
true story.
But I will share it with you guys, and if anybody wants to know, they can message me or us or whatever, and I'll share it. But it was an interesting experiment that I'm like, it kind of gets samey, you know, like you'll be like taco night, and then
next night
it'll be turkey.
The past 5 months for me have been like that. It's like
I'm cooking
pretty much all the time now, and it's like, well, I can cook like 9 things, and then that's pretty much my entire repertoire of things to create. So,
but this takes it in like. Pushes it. Like tonight we had chicken shawarma that I made. It was super easy too, where they basically were like, get a rotisserie chicken, shred it, and then you cook it down with some onions really quick, and then you make like a tzatziki sauce and use pita bread, and it was like delicious. It worked out really, really well. And then there was like a little bit of leftovers for lunch tomorrow, and I like pre-made my lunch for tomorrow and stuff. Like it works out super well, and you cook things that you wouldn't normally cook. So I don't know, I recommend, guys.
Not too bad.
Hey Ash.
Man, so my wife went to visit her sister and her other sister and Matt, and left me with the infant child for, I don't know, 4 days ish, and it went really well. It was fun. It was kind of weird. I didn't really get to do much, which is why I'm bringing it up, because I was basically just dadding it out, hanging out with a kid. But what my child and I did watch was a lot of Real World Road Rules Challenge.
Was that real? I thought you were joking.
No, I was serious. I'll tell the long version of the story, because why not? When I was a young man, I would watch this shit all the time. I'm talking like in my teens, into my 20s. I watched all of them. Like, I grew up watching Real World and stuff, and this is embarrassing, but I don't give a shit. And then I just kind of like 10, 15 years ago, I just stopped. I was like, this is dumb. I'm not going to watch it. Well, lo and behold, Hulu now has like a massive MTV catalog that they brought online. So they have like seasons upon seasons, entire seasons of like a lot of MTV stuff that I had never seen, just because I really had stopped watching MTV. And I was like, I just kind of want to watch these and watch the latest season to see what's up. And holy crap, I got so addicted when my wife was out of town. I watched like a season and a half of it while she was gone, and it was really good, man. I ended up really liking like all the stunts, and I kept, you know, trying to figure out if I could actually do them myself, like if I was actually capable. And I, you know, it was really exciting.
You really
took
this to like a whole new level.
I did. No, I was super into it. I'm not even kidding. I would like Google like you know, particular like people on the show, like where are they now, and like what do they really like.
I feel like Road Rules is right around where I dropped off.
Right.
Like I watched Real World for years, and then I feel like when Road Rules came in, which was like, I don't know, probably like 5 years after Real World, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like that's when I kind of was like, eh. Like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm watching anymore.
Well, that's the thing, is like, I'm not a big reality TV guy. I don't really watch much of it at all. And
Famous.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't watch a lot of
famous.
It.
What was it called? Naked and Afraid.
Naked and Afraid. Every once in a while, I watch Naked and Afraid. But you know, when I was a kid, I grew up with Real World. It was really one of the first big popular reality TV shows.
Yeah.
So embarrassingly, that's really what I watched a lot of this week when I was babysitting. I shouldn't say babysitting. When I was fathering.
Babysitting.
It's not yours.
Well, that's done.
Yeah. Now that I can just give him back. I did get a chance to play the Titanfall 2 beta stress alpha omega fucking meat grinder shawarma test. And that was, it was interesting. We'll talk about that in the review section. And I don't think I watched any movies or anything this week. It's just kind of all a bit of a big blur. But I'm excited to talk about all this news because there's a lot of news stuff. So let's just go ahead and get down to brass tacks.
News.
I kind of wanted to do a bit of a grind my gears because I was looking
this
at
is
the
an ash grind my gears.
Yeah,
I thought for sure this was Scott.
Nope.
Jeez.
I was actually kind of like before Matt got here, I was talking to Scott about this, but I was looking at the release calendar and I noticed that all of these, and there's tons of AAA coming out in quarter four, but the thing that really just like I saw and it pissed me off was the fact that we have major AAA shooter games all coming out within a month of each other. And they're like a week apart. So there was just a big Destiny release on the 20th. Then October 11th, we have Gears 4. October 18th, we have Battlefield 1. October 28th, we have Titanfall 2. And then on November 5th, we have Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. And the reason why I kind of have this down as a grind my gears is the fact that I really think this is really unhealthy for the industry for a number of major reasons. One, these games are really, really expensive to make. And the fact that they're coming out so close to one another can do nothing but hurt the publisher and hurt the studio that's actually producing the game. Because there's only really room for major success with probably one of these because it's all the exact same audience. So it's kind of curious what you guys thought about all of these coming out in the same clump and why this keeps happening, why the release window isn't staggered throughout the year like it should be.
I feel like there's two things at play, and the first one is that it's the holiday season, and so they're trying to sell to people that not just gamers but people that buy gifts for gamers, and then the other part being that just shooters are popular, so there's going to be a lot of them. You know, there's there's not a lot of point and click adventure games coming out this holiday season. There's a lot of shooters, you know what I mean? So, and then I think, you know, like you said, a game with like a strong single player component with like a narrative is very expensive to make. So I think that's why you see fewer, you know, like Tomb Raiders coming out in the holiday season. Cause these shooters are just like, you know, you just rig up the multiplayer component and put it online and hope that people play it and then make money off microtransactions. And so I think it's just more popular and lucrative, and that's why we see more of those games.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think, though? Sorry, go ahead, Matt. Go ahead.
This is going to be worthless now. I was just going to make a joke. I was going to say, I just think it's really bold of all of them to put out brand new IP right around the holidays.
Oh, right.
There's not a one. Like, I think that's what's like a bummer about it to me is that, like, I think when Titanfall first came out, it was new and fresh and like a new IP, and it was exciting. And like what's kind of becoming a bummer now is that like not only are they glutting all these shooters together, but they're all sequels to like, or not sequels, but you know, necessarily, but they're all like the next version of this game that's already existed. That's just going to be tweaked and like fixed up so that you can play it. But that, I think that's what bums me out more than anything. Cause I honestly like in this list, like Gears 4, if you guys can talk me into Battlefield, and then Titanfall would be the only three that I would even consider.
Right. And then we're going to have the problem that if we do, if all three of us pick up those three titles and we want to sit down to play, then we have to make the decision of which one are we going to sit down to play? Like, cause our time is limited, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be really hard for us. And then we'll probably end up, honestly, we're not going to probably buy all three at the same time. Like, you know, we may only end up deciding to get one of these, and it's going to be the one that we end up purchasing, you know, together for a group, you know, for a group game. Mm-hmm. So I truly feel that these were staggered throughout the year, even if they were finished, you know, even if they're completely done, because none of these are going to be done until like the week before they ship, finger quotes, right? So even if they were done right around this time and they waited a little while, and I understand from a marketing perspective why they can't do that, but if they could hold off and like not worry about, you know, this fiscal year and just hold off on shipping the game and stagger it, I honestly think it would sell better. Like if you were to wait and not have the competition of another massive AAA title like breathing down your butthole, like I honestly think that you would sell more copies. I don't know.
Wouldn't you be breathing up your butthole technically?
I guess it depends on your position, right?
But all, you know, like all of these games, you know, at some point after the new year will be $40, you know.
Right.
So if you, the games you wait on will be cheaper, but then they won't make as much money. So I think that just kind of backs up your point about.
But I mean, I wouldn't argue, Ash. Like, I think the two surprising ones in this list for me are Gears 4 and Titanfall. Because right. I feel like Battlefield and Call of Duty, unless I'm wrong, kind of always aim for Hollywood for a holiday cycle, and then they always come out like within a month of each other. It's like that's like they want to just poke each other all the time, and that's like their whole job of, you know, like if one of them, if Activision announces before EA, then the other one has to like rush their title out just so they can not get eaten alive by the other title or whatever. Gears 4, I feel like, could come out in like July if it wanted to, and it would be the biggest game of that moment, like period.
Yeah, just
like Gears 4 could come out whenever it wants. It doesn't even matter. And
right.
So that's a little surprising to me. And then Titanfall, I mean, I guess it makes sense for them to try to do the holiday rush, but I feel like they're the smallest of all these, right? Like they're
that's
the ones
kinda
who
should be. That's why I put this list together, is I saw that, you know, they're all so close, and you know, I honestly think that Titanfall, because it shares a very similar audience to Battlefield and Call of Duty, I think it's going to have a hard time out of the gate. I really
feels like, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want to think that. I mean, you know, I do think it's a really great franchise, but I think like that is some insanely steep competition.
Yeah.
Within a couple weeks of their release, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you can only shoot so much shit, you know, and then there's still games that are doing very well. Like Overwatch still has like 11, 12 million concurrent players. It's like,
right.
You know, you can only shoot stuff so many hours in the day. There's only, and you can only level up in so many games and like devote your time and hone your skill in a particular shooter until you start going a little bit crazy. So I don't know. I just thought it was stupid.
I think in this list that you have here, the real problem is with the last three games, because I think that, you know, there is still a Destiny fan base and people will play that game, which is fine.
Yeah, and of course, it's like WoW at this point, yeah, right? Like it's just going to be ongoing until,
right. And then there's
it feels like stopping.
There's a, you know, obviously there's a dedicated Gears fan base, and you know, that also has a narrative too, which will most likely be multiplayer, yeah, right? So we could play that all together, you know, straight through, which would be really awesome. So not so much of a problem there, but I think that when you get to Battlefield, Titanfall 2, and Call of Duty, I feel like those are the three games that are really kind of competing for the same dollars, like the same exact dollars, you know, the overlap is much closer among those games, I feel like, than any of the other ones. So I think that's the biggest problem with those.
Yeah. And I mean, before I close this out, I mean, I honestly think that this is born out of, you know, older numbers, people looking at statistics saying that games sell better in the holiday season, which they which they do. But I think it's because these games are afraid to break out and sell during a different time out of fear that they won't do well as well in the non-holiday season. So if they shipped in, you know, Q3 as opposed to Q4, well, then there's someone, either, you know, the publisher or maybe even someone at the studio that's like, no, we have to do it at this particular time, you know, for better odds of better sales. But I honestly just think the model is so broken and so stupid. Like, just stagger it. Like, we play games year round, just put the games out year round.
But it's the same model that, you know, like all, I don't remember what day games are anymore, but that like all releases must come out on Tuesdays Wednesdays or whatever. And it's just like that whole concept is like breaking down quickly. And I think people just need to get out of that thought pattern. So we'll see.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was grind my gears.
Yeah. Let's move on. What's going on with PAX West?
So I'm going. I'm saddened that you guys are not. But I
know.
Totally get it.
Next year.
We'll go to the next one. In a big. We'll like do a human pyramid at the next one.
I had a plan. Maybe we can talk about it offline. I have an idea.
A small human pyramid.
Yeah. But we'll do that the next one. But anyway, I'll be there running around recording stuff. I do have some appointments with some games, so I'm still going to try and record some stuff while I'm out there. I think like Nate is going to record with me from Press to Reset.
Excellent.
And some other, you know, fun folks like Mylan and, you know, people that have been on the show many times that'll be out there as well. So we'll still be recording some things. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of playing it by ear and we'll see what happens. But that's the plan, to go out there and record stuff. I'm on a weird panel called Orientation, which I guess is like teaching people. Teaching people about, I honestly don't really know what it is. I think it's teaching people like the value of packs, which is cool. Like
it's Mylan's like mixer panel, isn't it?
I think so.
Sort of part of it.
I think that's what it is.
I'm kind of getting a room because it's opening night, right?
It's opening morning. So Friday morning. Yeah. Opening morning. So, so if you're at PAX, go to the orientation panel. I guess I'll be there talking about how PAX is cool. And I genuinely think it is. I think it's great. Like, we've made a lot of really good friends and had a lot of really amazing memories and experiences out at PAX. So maybe I'll talk about that. I don't know.
I just kind of like the idea that for someone going to PAX for the very first time, it's going to be your face is one of the first things that they're going to see. Like,
oh, no.
At the show.
Oh, boy.
Like, that's right terrifying. Out of the gate. First day. You know, they slept, you know, they got up early, they were really excited, and they go to the panel, and there you are, and you have to set the tone. You have to set the tone for the whole weekend.
You should wear, like, a Philly Fanatic style, you know, mascot outfit for it.
Can I just dress as a Juggalo? And
so just regular?
Yeah, just regular. Come out with some Jankos and be like, what's up, y'all? You want to pwn some noobs? Welcome to PAX.
Just regular old Ash.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So anyway, so if you're going to PAX West, say hi, run around, just follow at NerdAppropriate, say hello, and I will be there.
Sweet.
Hey, let's talk about No Man's Sky.
What is the deal?
So, man, have the tides turned in like the last week and a half since we've talked about this game. So it came out, got okay reviews. I think the Metacritic is sitting around, last I checked, was at 70. Let me check real quick. Mm-hmm. Live on the podcast here.
Live Metacritic updates.
Metacritic.
I'll let you tell the premise of the news and then I'll
okay. So the premise of the news is, there's been a lot of drop off in the number of people playing No Man's Sky, and also a lot of people, supposedly thousands of people. Oh, it's at 71 now, so it went up a little bit. But a lot of people demanding refunds after playing for, you know, 40 and 50 hours, which is something that is now happening on PC a lot.
Yeah.
People demanding that they get their money back because the game is not what was advertised. So brand new sense of entitlement to the gaming community these days. But
hey, do you remember when Hello Games was an indie developer?
I do. I think they still kind of.
Oh, that's right. There's still
like 10 people in a room building a game.
Wow, I think that's crazy.
The two things that I get out of this, because we won't prop up the specific articles you posted, but like I read through the articles. There's a weird sense on the internet now, and it's not just with games necessarily, but it's with games specifically, to like dance on the graves of something that, you know, like waha, we showed it kind of like attitude.
Isn't that strange? You're absolutely right. There really is.
Mm-hmm. And it's so weird. Like, I get that this game, which we've talked about endlessly, not the game itself, but the circumstances around this game and the marketing hype that went along with this game built so high that it was just like, there's zero way it was going to meet anything that was being said. And like, I don't even think 90% of that was Hello Games, you know, like
I don't think any of this is their fault, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, they're just dudes making a thing, and they're just hoping you're going to like it, you know? Like, it's got to be terrifying. And yeah, I think the thing that disgusts me most, and it happens, you know, with TV shows and movies and every, I think, creative thing where somebody's putting a thing out there, is this, like, weird need now on the internet to, like, dance on the grave of the thing that we think we killed successfully or something, you know? Like, it's very odd. I don't understand it. I'm too old.
No, I totally agree with you, though, man. I think it's a weird sort of pack mentality that happens. And, you know, things like Steam user scores and Metacritic scores, they hold a lot of weight now. And that number determines the fates of a lot of games, and also just the public opinion of a lot of games and a lot of developers. So when No Man's Sky came out and it didn't meet the expectations of a lot of people, you know, even though the game by, you know, I've heard many people saying that it's an incredible experience.
Yeah.
It wasn't what they thought it was going to be. And therefore now it's getting sort of this negative stigma. But at the same time, like, you know, I think the fact that a small studio of 15 people built an entire, you know, massive galaxy out of, you know, this algorithm, I think that's just fascinating and really cool.
I've been thinking a little bit, unless Scott, did you have anything you wanted to?
Oh, I was just gonna, I think I wrote this on Twitter. I just want to quickly add that, you know, 3 years ago, everybody championed Sony because they trolled Microsoft by saying, mm-hmm. like, you could take your game discs and sell them back or share them with friends. And I just kind of find it ironic that people are now asking for refunds on their digital copy of a game that they,
yeah.
That they bought for constant online play.
I think that goes to the Kinect a little bit too, that idea of like dancing on the grave, you know, and what you're talking about where Sony was like, oh, you know, trolling Microsoft during the E3 or whatever. Mm-hmm. That like, I think that all, that, there's a weird need to whip up a frenzy on the internet, but
I feel like the whole result is like, yay, we're still kicking the can down the road and nothing is new, you know, congratulations.
But I was going to say that I've been thinking about No Man's Sky a little bit lately, and I feel bad for them in a different way now than I think I felt bad for them before, which mm-hmm. was that the hype train was so large, which is that they may have been in a catch-22 where they were originally like four guys, right? Now they're like 10 or 15, but wasn't really, really tiny at first.
When we first talked to them about Joe Danger, I think it was Joe Danger 2.
Yeah.
We asked them how big your studio was and they said, oh, just four of us. And it's like, wow, that's really impressive. It's a really impressive game for four people. And
that's
then they
what
built,
I thought.
They built this game and I think that we think it's like somewhere between 16 and 25 now, something like that. Yeah.
But so like the catch-22 they may have been in was like, okay, we can keep working on this game and quietly put it out on Steam and like push, you know, sort of like the indie market and maybe get that kind of like Stanley Parable or was it That Dragon Cancer, or This Dragon Cancer, whatever, mm-hmm. Like that like weird slow build that happens just on rare, like lightning in a bottle kind of indie game, slow build, huge, you know, respect at the end of the day. And they may have been able to do that, but they may have also looked at their bank accounts and been like, holy shit, I don't think we can, like, if we do mm-hmm. this game will never come out. So they may have gotten into bed with Sony thinking, okay, well, Sony's going to help pay for marketing, they take some of the stress off, we can like get this thing done and maybe we can get some investors in on this because we'll have like a bigger name behind us. And then like hype train rolls into the station and they're like, oh shit, like that this wasn't part of it. We just mm-hmm. we're just still making the same game we were making before, guys. Like, I don't know where this is coming from, you know. And they may have just been caught in this thing that there was no way to get out of. It was like, do we make the game or not? Like, how do we finish this and how do we get it funded? Like, it's got to be a nightmare. Like, I can't imagine being in their positions and now having to deal. Hopefully they all come out of it, you know, with their sanity intact and keep making expansive games. Because it's like, to me, I don't, you know, whether we've talked about it before, where like, I may not play this game. I may pick it up at some point on PC and play it because it's interesting as a concept. I just know me as a 36-year-old dude is not like, it's just not my thing. And I'm mm-hmm. aware of what my thing is now. But that doesn't mean I like wish like ill upon the studio for like, oh, you didn't make the exact game I wanted. Like, I hope they keep making games because it seems like they're doing interesting things. So
yeah, right, I mean, if it tells me anything, it's that people really want more games that are like out there. And so mm-hmm. I'm just excited for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish the guys at Hello Games the best. I think it's unfortunate that people are being so negative, but that's just kind of how the internet is these days, unfortunately. Yeah. So hopefully they bounce back, but we'll see.
Well, why don't we pivot to some more positive news?
Yay!
And talk about September's Games with Gold, which I think is actually pretty solid as far as like a free set of four games goes.
Yeah.
So for September, they announced early a new game called Earthlock Festival of Magic, which appears to be an indie action RPG. So it's one of those titles which is being released to Xbox One at the same time where it's going Games with Gold. So that should be exciting for a brand new game. And then the back half of September, we will see Assassin's Creed Chronicles China, which is the 2.5D sort of like side-scrolling take on Assassin's Creed. And I played this one. There's actually three of them, but my understanding is that this is probably the best of the three, and it kind of has more in common with Mark of the Ninja than it does with an Assassin's Creed game. So I think that should be enough for most people to decide whether or not they want to play it, but I think it's pretty good. And then on Xbox, you know, and then of course now the Xbox games are going to be backwards compatible. We're going to get Forza Horizon, which is a, you know, the arcade racer from Microsoft. So
yeah,
interesting.
I don't really even care what the IP is anymore. Anytime there's like an arcade racing game that's available for free, I will play it because those are fun just to mess around with. And then back half of September is the original Mirror's Edge.
I know, that's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, that's super cool to be able to like go back to that game and play it again. So I'm pretty stoked for that, having, you know, recently completed the new one. So kind of have like a craving to go back for more of that. So I actually think that's a pretty good lineup.
I think it's a good lineup, and like Mirror's Edge is pretty awesome, so I'm ready for that as well.
Yeah, and Forza Horizon, like, why not? It'll just be casual.
I don't think I've played an arcade racer since like Burnout, I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing. I played Need for Speed for a while, and I never played any of the Forza games, but I'm certainly interested to try. So it'll be free. So there you go.
All right. So the next thing is. Sort of quick, it's kind of a grind my gears, but Ash already wrote one in there, and I don't want to write two grind my gears.
It's just not me doing it.
Yeah, so I named it Matt's Startup Corner.
I like that.
Are we good with that? this is kind of like general news. We don't always talk about tech stuff. I'm kind of plugged into it, and this was like all over the office the other day, but it just came out that Uber, up to this point in the year, so it's not actually first quarter, it's I think the full first 6 months, has posted a $1.2 billion loss.
Wow.
That is giant. Like,
for doing what?
How?
Well, so they came out and they said that supposedly the U.S. is still profitable. It's pushing into China that is killing them at the moment and just losing money hand over fist.
Wow.
But the other side of that coin is they're in a price war with Lyft right now in America, which is a service that I tend to use over Uber. And Lyft is trying, their latest thing was, we are trying not to lose $50 million a month.
Wow.
A month.
Wow.
So, like, these are two companies that are kind of, the reason I bring this up is that startups are weird to me. Like, Twitter, I still don't think is profitable. Ever,
yeah, I don't think so don't, either, yeah.
And they operate at a loss. Uber operates at a loss. Foursquare operates at a loss. Like, a lot of these companies operate just consistently at a loss, but they're called like unicorn companies or something, where they think, you know, they get valuated at this like insane price. And as long as they're private, which Uber is, then like they never have to actually prove that valuation. Whereas like Amazon's a public company, right? They're traded.
Right, right.
So like if Amazon loses, you know, $500 million in a quarter, like their stockholders will like freak the fuck out. Like, their value will go down quickly, you know, whereas Uber doesn't really have to deal with that because they've got a weird mishmash of, you know, Goldman Sachs among other people that invest in them. But it's just such a weird thing to me that I think we all think Uber is this like mega company that's making tons of money. And like, here it comes out that not only are they losing money, but they're losing money like to an insane degree.
Yeah. They're still trying to break out just the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. I had no idea that they were. I mean, what do you think that, I mean, what do you think their overhead is? Why do you think that it costs so much to run a company? Like, is it all advertising or I don't know.
It's not that much advertising, but
I know, but like, but I guess I don't really understand like what costs them so much money. It's not like they're manufacturing anything, you know,
right.
Building anything. It's just a bunch of guys with fucking cars.
Well, and that's the other thing, is that they contract those guys, but they've been embroiled in legal battles. They do operate a service like that. It's not like it's cheap to run the amount of servers they probably have to run to make sure that all this stuff is working correctly and connected correctly. And, you know, like it's not, they hire an insane amount of engineers. They're doing a lot of R&D in the States. Like, I don't know if you guys saw, but in Pittsburgh, they are pushing to have automated cars on the road in the next like 6 months or something.
Damn.
But the thing, there's negatives with that too, which is that every automated car, like, safety expert is like, there's no way, that's not even feasible. Like, it won't happen in 6 months. And Kalanick or whatever from Uber is like, well, it will. And they're like, well, what do you...
It's not that easy. I mean, it's
well, they're known for just breaking laws. Like they will deal with legal fallout after they've already done the thing that, I mean, Uber shouldn't exist. I don't know if you guys realize that, but like it was an illegal service at first that they created.
Yeah, because they need to be just, like, licensed or something, right? To operate a vehicle like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same sense that like Airbnb just kind of like decided to start. Like there was no legally nothing was on their side. They were just like, well, what if people rented a room out of their house? Like that's not legal. It's not a thing. So I don't know. It just weirds me out that so many startups, we have this, I feel like we're in a really bad bubble, which is a thing that everybody's been saying for years now. But like, you know, like when Snapchat gets evaluated at, you know, $1 billion or whatever, and WhatsApp sells for $1.5 billion or whatever it is, like the numbers are so gigantic that it just feels like we're in a bubble. And I feel like when this kind of stuff comes out, I'm like, I want to like point out it and be like, see, like this is right. bad, everybody. Right. Why are we thinking this is okay?
Yeah, it's just the culture, culture that we're in right now.
Yeah, I don't know. Does it bother you? Like when you not knowing this before and seeing this now, like does this worry you or bother you? Like, and I'm not saying that like I don't think Uber or Lyft aren't valuable. I use them, you know, a decent amount. Like I think they're both valuable services. This is shocking to me. These numbers are huge.
Yeah, I kind of just picture like Entertainment 720 is kind of the model or the mockery of the startup culture, you know?
Yeah. That was perfect.
Yeah, it's kind of how.
To anyone that doesn't know what Scott's referencing, it's Parks and Recreation, right? It was John Ralphio's company.
Yeah, with Aziz.
With Aziz, yeah.
His character, yeah.
So I don't know.
I think it is. I think it's a weird place that we're in, and I had no idea that Uber was losing this much money. I mean, I don't understand really how they operate anyway. Like, is there an office that the guys check into? Like, is it just something you like? There is. So there's like a place where they go.
Well, much like Facebook has offices, Ash, just because it's on the internet doesn't mean.
Yeah, I know, but it just seems like it seems to me Uber just seems so nebulous. Like all of a sudden Uber's in Orlando, but it's like, okay, how do you like? How does it work?
You know, like, what is there an Orlando field office? Oh, well,
the drivers don't go anywhere. Like,
that's what I mean. Like, do you just like sign into a fucking website? Like, my name's Earl. I drive a fucking Chevy.
Yes.
Like, I want to be an Uber driver.
Yes.
Are you a murderer? No. And then you go, and that's it.
Yes, and there's issues around that too. They've been sued over that kind of behavior as well, which is that like there's been attacks and stuff in Ubers. Like, it's not, they paint a very pretty picture of how wonderful this world is that they're building for you. That's, you know, like pure capitalism or whatever, but like there's some shitty things going on around it. And then when this number comes out, I just like, and to be super clear, Lyft, maybe not as much Lyft. I don't know what their backing is like. Uber can lose $1.2 billion and are still totally fine. Like that company is getting handed cash like you would not believe. So they can lose that money and just keep operating and move forward. And as long as they don't piss off, you know, the weird amalgamation of rich people that have given them money, then they're fine. There's nothing wrong there. So I mean,
much like Google, like catching an Uber has just become part of like the collective unconscious of our country. Like it's just, it's a thing now. And I think that's how you end up becoming mega rich. You have to make the thing that everyone knows, even though you don't really realize why, you know, it, you know, like my parents. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. So I mean, we don't have to stick on this forever. I saw those numbers and I didn't know if you guys had heard them, and it's just one of those things that I'm plugged into that I'm just like, man, this just feels so bad in so many ways that like it's worrisome to me, I guess, at the end of the day. You know, like if Uber all of a sudden all their funding dropped and they closed their doors, there'd be like hundreds and thousands of people that are out of work immediately. You're like, not just the drivers, but the engineers and the testers, and like everybody else is just gone. That economy just ends, kind of. So,
jeez.
I don't know. It's scary. Next thing is really quick. I just think it's funny because this is a company that has closed more physical bookstores than anyone else in the world. Amazon is opening 2 physical bookstores in Chicago and Portland.
Wow.
Like, I feel like these are 2 middle fingers in the middle of the country to Barnes & Noble and Borders. Like, yeah. They're just like, look at us, guys.
I wonder if the Portland one is going to be across the street from Powell's Books.
From Powell's.
I'm sure they will.
I'm surprised they didn't open it across the street from Strand in New York or something, like just iconic bookstores that are on the
Just like, oh, yeah, well, we're going to shut you down, too.
It's so insane.
Can't you just see? Right. I feel like the stand-up comedians' jokes are already writing themselves. You know, it's like, I went into the Amazon bookstore the other day, and I found a book, and it was $16.99. I was like, just rather buy this on Amazon instead. It's like so ridiculous. It makes no sense.
I don't even understand the drive. Like, what is the? It's not like their brand isn't known. Like, I don't
maybe they want to sell Kindles.
Oh, like put them in front of people, but they're in Target and shit, aren't they?
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe that's the thing is that they want to sell their own devices, you know, in a retail place where they can just push them hard and nothing else.
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought it was pretty. So there's that, guys.
Cool.
They're probably, honestly, thinking about it, they're going to end up making so much money just on the advertising they're getting from people talking about them opening physical bookstores. Like, it's free advertising. Everybody's going to fucking mention how ridiculous it is. And then it's just like across the United States, everyone's going to be talking about the physical Amazon store. And it's like, you know, how much would they have to pay for that kind of advertising?
Plus, like, they opened them in two kind of like far apart cities, right? I feel like they're going to become like weird tourist destinations where people are like, yes. I want to go see the Amazon bookstore in Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a weird thing.
Boy. Good stuff.
So I added this news item, but I know, Scott, you've read it a little
bit. Yeah, I read a little bit about it. So this is, I mean, it's kind of a big deal. There's, you know, so this is about the division, of course. And what they're going to do. Yeah, sorry. I'm just going to start talking about something and not name the topic. So in a nutshell, what the division devs are doing is that they are focusing on the core gameplay experience. So that's kind of the whole reason for this blog post. But what's really fascinating about it is that the season pass or their DLC plan included a number of both free and paid DLC packages. And so I think in the season pass, there were actually three paid DLC add-ons that were planned to roll out over the course of the year. And it turns out that
is it the Brooklyn one they're going to miss, right? Or
actually they haven't even released the second one yet. So the second and third DLCs are being pushed back to the end of the year, early 2017, so that they can focus on fixing the core gameplay experience. So I think that that's very telling in terms of, I don't know, maybe I thought this was just the court of public perception, but you know, we played the Division for about a month, played through the main campaign, and then didn't really find a lot of satisfaction in the Dark Zone and just sort of quit playing.
Yeah.
And you know, I would go, you know, I use the Xbox app a lot on my computer, so you can follow games, and I always see, you know, the Division will post something, and they do this on Twitter too, and then like every single comment underneath that, you know, post that they made is fix your game. So I think that they, I don't know, maybe this is more true than it is, you know, internet bashing, right? I guess maybe they do have some actual problems. I would guess that with other games like, you know, Overwatch, and I think people just went back to Destiny. And they're kind of seeing that they really do need to do something to fix the core experience, because I think they've lost a lot of the casual players, people like us that wanted to play for the story, just want to have fun with their friends, and aren't really interested in like the, you know, highly competitive, cutthroat nature of the Dark Zone.
Well, and it felt like they wrenched the Dark Zone up like too quickly too. Like,
yes.
I feel like we got through the main campaign. It took us, you know, whatever, a few weeks, and then immediately it was like, and now we've made the Dark Zone even more difficult and harder to get equipment out, and, you know, like more brutal. And I was like,
it's like,
what?
Now you can cut the tow line. It's like, oh wow, thanks a lot, I guess.
Yeah. Like, it like wrenched so quickly that it felt like it was just like I was caught off guard by it. I was like, wait, what? I haven't even been able to like settle into this game yet, and you're already like wrenching shit up, which felt brutal, like in a way that just made me not want to play at all. So
and I mean, if you,
well,
I mean,
the crafting was really unforgiving too.
Yeah,
like,
the crafting.
You play for like 3 or 4 hours and like break down an object, and then maybe you'd build something that would have like a random attribute, and then you could like assign the attribute to another thing if your thing came out crappy. And it was like, this is just like not enjoyable. It's just it's brutal, and like it's time consuming
to do crafting. Right. And like I get it, they had a hard time with balancing, right? Like, so that we think they ratcheted up the crafting requirements because people could feasibly just camp and take advantage of it and build the best thing that you could possibly build, right? But at the same time, it's like Scott was saying, it kind of punishes this like core casual player out of even wanting to play. And it's like, well, then where do you end up at the end of the day? And maybe that's what they're going to address.
Especially the Dark Zone content is basically pointless if you're a solo player. I feel like what they should do is just offer a version of the Dark Zone for, you know, like for private matches. Like you can go in by yourself and play against AI. You can go in with a group of people, play against AI or other, you know, maybe you can have like your own instance of that. And I don't know if that cuts you off from the rest of the game. That's fine, because I just don't care. I don't care to get involved with, you know, the types of, you know, the way that people play in the Dark Zone. It's just not,
yeah.
You know, I think they imagined a world right. in which like it would just be a tense situation, but in reality, it was just an asshole in the Dark Zone. It's like, well, that's not very fun for very long unless you're traveling with like a pack of people.
It was like a weird social experiment at first, right? Like at the very beginning, we were all like, whoa, this really makes you think about what kind of player you're going to be. And then like, you know, 2 hours later, cut to us going like, oh, everybody's an asshole.
Yeah, it's like the Stanford prison experiment. Yeah, like, it's pretty much all it is.
Yeah.
If there's no consequence, everyone will murder everyone else.
Yeah, it's just like,
and take their things, right?
So I
hate to be like entirely negative about the Division experience, because I you know, when I played with you guys through the campaign, it was some of the most fun that I've had in a multiplayer game in years, right? Mm-hmm. Like going through those story missions and each of us having like, you know, Matt being the sniper and Scott being like the support. And I just thought that was just so neat that we could fill those roles and go through the narrative in that way. And more games need to do that. But I think getting people to stick around is the real challenging thing.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Yeah. We also did that in Fuse and had a great time. So like you can.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
Like with a group of people, like just about any game is fun. And I think it's like, how do you repair this game for the people that played for a month and then moved on or got tired of what happens after you finish the story? I think that's the real challenge.
And that's the real challenge. Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course. And I mean, honestly, sort of like laud them for admitting and like going like, hey, we're just going to go like, this is going to suck for everybody. We're sorry. We're fucking up, but we're going to go try to adjust this and like make the rights right again, you know, and like see if we can fix this ship. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I think that's cool that they're even trying.
Hopefully it's not too little too late, and you know, when you've got five other shooters coming out in like a month.
True.
Yeah,
so good true.
Luck. Big ones too.
Yep. Yeah.
So the last bit of news really quickly, the first thing is super important, and that's actually the entire reason I wrote this piece of news at all, and then the second piece is just kind of like for funsies, because I don't know if you guys care or not, but there was a recent, I know a lot of us have iPhones, I know everybody on this podcast has an iPhone, there was a recent security update, and listen to your Tech Corner buddy Matt, this is like a majorly important security update. There's a huge security hole and flaw inside of the iPhone right now, and you should definitely patch. So if you've been ignoring that little update, or you're like, well, I haven't backed up and I don't, like, this is an important one. Just go through the pain of whatever you need to do to get that update rolled in, because the actual flaw is pretty nasty. So
yeah,
go
horrible.
Do it.
Yep.
Yeah, 935, it's the one you need to go get.
I need to do that.
Yeah, do it. It's really not good. And then I think maybe it was The Verge or somebody posted that this is like the first time they've seen somebody take over an iPhone from a security. Like this is like the first like real actual threat to your phone. Like you should be patching it quickly. And to Apple's credit, they addressed it very quickly. Like the moment it came out, they were like, there's a patch. Like we did it already. Sorry, everybody. So go do that. The other thing's iPhone 7's coming out around the corner, probably a few weeks away. I don't think they've announced the date yet of when they'll do their little presser, but there are rumors abound, and I want to see what you guys think of these really quickly. The first one is no more headphone jack.
I heard about this.
I'm kind of okay with it.
I'm a little okay with it. It really depends. The problem is if they stick with their proprietary, which they will, Lightning port, they're really kind of like railroading you into one thing. You'll still be able to get like a Lightning.
I was gonna say there'll probably be an adapter.
There will be an adapter for sure. There's almost no doubt that that wouldn't happen. But otherwise, if you got like, you'd have to get one of two kinds of headphones, which is either Bluetooth connected, which then means you'll have headphones that need to charge and have a better chance of breaking, and then Two, you could get a lightning connected headphone, which then means you're saying like, hello, iPhone, these headphones will only ever be usable
yes.
with you and so with nothing else.
Could you, I mean, it's maybe not true, but it seems like right off the bat, you can't charge and use headphones at the same time if they're wired.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, yeah,
I don't know. I mean, if that happens and I upgrade, I'll probably end up going Bluetooth. I can't imagine that I'll get lightning headphones just on the off chance that you ever want to use them with anything else ever.
That's kind of par for the course for them, and they like to eliminate ports and kind of push people forward. So, you know, if that's the future, then I'm willing to try it, I suppose.
The other is no more home button.
That I don't get, because the home button is sort of an important button if you need to, like, turn your phone off, like, in a hurry, you know, like, if it's frozen.
Well, you'll still have a power button, seemingly. Like, there will probably still be a volume rocker and a power button, I would imagine, and the silencer switch thing that you have on iPhones.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not... I don't really use, like, Siri or anything, so taking that button away, I don't really know what I would miss by not having it.
It's weird to me, like, I don't really know how often that button... So, like, I've only had a couple times where the phone actually freezes to where only hardware buttons would do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even then, I tend to just power off entirely, which is the power, which they can't get rid of the power button, so that'll still be there. But yeah, I don't know. What I'd be interested to see is where they put the fingerprint reader.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know about you guys, I use my fingerprint to sign in. I buy stuff with Apple Pay. Like, I use that thing a lot. So if they get rid of that button, which is feasibly what reads the fingerprint, it'll be interesting to see.
Maybe it'll actually be on the screen.
Well, so that's the next rumor is that it will be wall-to-wall screen, like basically just
like a Samsung
one huge OLED screen, and that they also may release a second model, which this is very not Apple, and I'm not going to say it's not going to happen. They've done a lot of things that aren't Apple lately, but I would be sort of blown away if this happened, which is there's a rumor of them doing the wraparound screen like the Samsung Edge.
Yes.
So weird.
I've heard that as well.
So, and it would mean that it will be, they've even said that this will be a higher end model, so that then they would have the low end model, like a middle tier model, the high end model, and then like a super high end model, which is like not Apple's usually just like, this your phone, pick a storage, move on. Like that's like all they ever do. And now they're going to have like four or five different iPhone models out at the same time. So I don't know. Very
weird.
Feels very un-iPhone, but what do I know?
What do you
know? So, yeah. What do I know?
What do you
know? I actually don't know anything this time. I knew more last year than I do this year.
Well, what I do know is that we're going to take a break.
Yeah.
And we're going to go do some reviews on the other side.
All right. Sounds good.
This is Hannah Tull from Life is Strange, and you're listening to the Rated NA Podcast.
Okay, let's get into Deus Ex Go, which is the mobile game from the... Who is that? Square Enix Montreal?
Maybe it's Square Enix, yeah. Is it Montreal?
I think they have a specialized team making these Go games. That, you know, they did
Hitman
originally, and then Lara Croft, and now they made one for Deus Ex. And each game has the same like core gameplay mechanic, but they managed to do something, you know, unique to the IP that they are sort of like doing the take on in each game, and this one is no different. So this one has, you know, the enemies behave a little bit differently than they do in Tomb Raider and Hitman, and then there, you know, you have some hacking abilities and a little bit of stealth mechanic baked into it. So if you haven't played any of their Square Enix Go games, I would recommend any of them, really, but the thing that's really fascinating about the Deus Ex Go game is that you can link it through your Square Enix account and unlock, I think they call them Praxis kits, which are basically the, you know, what you use for upgrade points in Deus Ex. Like, so if you plan on getting Mankind Divided, you can unlock like a maximum of I think 5 Praxis kits for your game, which is kind of
that's
neat.
Cool.
Yeah,
I'm kind of surprised, not to cut you off, that none of us are playing the new Deus Ex.
Yeah. I actually was planning on getting it this weekend, and then I didn't yet, but I may get it this week.
It's supposed to be great, man. I've heard nothing but good things about it.
I love that setting.
Yeah, I actually wanted to replay the first one before doing this one again.
I don't know that I ever beat the first one, now that I think about it.
It got really hard.
Yeah. I definitely did finish it, but I wanted to go through and see some of the alternate, components that you could see in the game.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Alternate endings.
Yeah. The only thing that's weird about not to segue too much, but the only thing I heard that was weird about the main game is that they had a season pass. Part of the season pass included some, story content, of course, but also some consumables like extra Praxis kits. But the Praxis kits are only available to the first playthrough that you play in the game.
Well, I had one really quick question, though. Are you playing on your phone or your iPad?
I'm playing on my phone.
And it works?
Yeah. I mean, it's not so intricate that it's impossible to play.
Cool. So we're going to move on to The Tick, which is a new show that's an old show.
Weird. What a weird IP to bring back, and there's people that are super excited and people that are pissed, and I'm like, I can't believe there are this many Tick fans to get mad.
I loved it growing up, and I think I may be the one who made Scott and Andrew and Adam, our friends, watch The Tick.
True story.
Is that true? I thought it was. Yes. I couldn't remember for sure.
Patrick Warburton.
So both versions, the cartoon and Patrick Warburton. I watched both of them endlessly. It hit the perfect bizarro superhero, comedy, comic book thing for me. For whatever reason, it just sat right in that pocket of things that I find hilarious and amazing. And the Patrick Warburton one is obviously kind of legendary, weirdly, even though I think it only ran for a season. I think it's only 14 episodes long.
Oh, probably. Really? I had no idea.
Well, it was on Fox, of course.
It was on Fox, yeah. And it might be two seasons. I don't remember exactly, but it was a very short run, for short-lived series. It did not do well, not shockingly, since it's based on Patrick Warburton being dressed in a bright blue Tick costume and running around. Barely saving the city from crime. So the backstory on the Tick is that he's this near impenetrable superhero character that is fighting in this city against a bad guy called the Terror, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And it's really not a dark, heavy comic book. It's more, especially from when it was a comic book, it's more of a sort of ode to the ridiculousness that is comic books. It'll kind of play on the idea that this guy is destroying buildings meanwhile he's saving the city from right. A bad guy. Did you watch the old series, Ash, or no?
I watched the old a little bit of both the animated and the live action, so I wasn't heavily into them, but I definitely watched them.
Yeah. So I was actually pretty unaware of this for a long time, that they were bringing it back, but Amazon picked it up and they're doing it currently in their pilot season. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can go watch the pilot right now. It's literally available for you. And then they are going to probably watch those analytics, see what everybody's watching, and then pick up the shows that they want to pick up. But this one, to speak more specifically towards this one, it's a little less slapsticky than the Patrick Warburton and definitely less than the cartoon version. I got a real weird read because I've seen a bunch of people comment that, oh man, this is the dark version of the Tick. But I don't know what Scott felt like, but I didn't walk away feeling like this pilot was super dark. It's definitely more grounded than the original two versions of the Tick that I watched, but not like a Nolanverse show. Scott, did you get that feel?
No, it just feels super bizarre. You're watching, if you had no idea what the Tick was, you would just be like, what the hell is happening right now?
Yeah.
Because it's just so weird, but it's like in that weirdness, that's where the humor is, I suppose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the cast is pretty awesome. Peter Serafinowicz is playing the Tick. Jackie Earle Haley is playing the Terror. Brennan Hines is Superion. Whoopi Goldberg's it was in it as Whoopi Goldberg, which was fantastic. But it was, I thought, fun. I had a lot of fun watching it. It kind of made me want to see another couple. I kind of wish their pilot season was five episodes. I get why it's not, but even a short run of what the series could be, because I feel like just a pilot is so hard to judge a show by. I have some outside information that I'll add to this, but Scott, did you enjoy it? Did you have fun with it? Did it make you feel like you're watching the old 90s version? Or
yeah, I mean, if they continued to make this, I would watch it. I think that's the main point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the little bit I know is that I saw an interview with the creator of this version. I do not remember his name offhand, but he talked about how versus the old shows, which really focused on the Tick, this show is going to focus on Arthur. And Arthur is the Tick who becomes, you know, spoiler alert from the pilot, Arthur becomes the Tick's sidekick. And he is kind of like the normal, logical human amidst the insanity that's happening around it. And the thing that I think maybe is what's making people feel like it's the darker version is sort of the introduced backstory of Arthur's character in this first pilot episode, which is that the Terror murdered people in front of him, including his dad, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And he's kind of, he's this like obsessive compulsive character who is obsessed with the Terror, and his sister is like kind of there going like, you need to calm down, like this is like, you know, do we need to bring you back to my house, and because he's living on his own and stuff. And the director or the creator of this version was like, well, we're going to focus more on Arthur and make it about what's it like to live in this world of insanity as a person, like a regular person, you know, not the Tick, who is like sort of non-empathetic and oblivious to the things that are happening around
That's the
him.
Weird part, yeah, for sure.
So I really enjoyed it. I'm with Scott. Like, if they keep making more of this, I will continue to watch this. Ash, you didn't catch it, right?
I have not seen it yet, yeah. I just saw it pop up the other day, and I was like, oh, I need to watch it.
Yeah. There are some weird things that you can feel are sort of studio-driven, which is, like, all of the costume. I feel like, I don't know about you guys, I feel like all superhero costumes look like they're made out of the same material now.
That's true. True story.
Like, they have that
like
weird...
dark foam.
Not even that, like, not, and I don't mean like in a fake way. I mean, it's like as if Spider-Man, Batman, the Tick, like Superman, they all go shopping at the same like superhero
fabric store.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it all looks like it's all got like texture now. Like everything's very, it looks like the military made it and then like somehow they got it.
It's kind for of that. Thing. It's for 4K TVs, man. You just got to be able to see that detail. Yeah.
I guess so. But I don't know. I really enjoyed it. If you haven't watched it yet, I would recommend it. I know there are some dissenting opinions, but I feel like it might just be that the new vehicle for the people's nostalgia is not living up to maybe what they wanted. But I don't think it's bad. And I actually think it would be fun to have a Tick on TV somewhere. So mm-hmm. I say go watch it. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I agree.
Awesome. I'll definitely check it out.
The next thing I want to talk about is a game called Armacrog, and it is a point-and-click adventure game from the creator of Earthworm Jim, who is Doug
Tenable. Yeah,
Tenable. Yeah, and Ash, you know a little something about him, right? I'm not as familiar with his art. I think
it's funny. My old roommate Mike is like the biggest Doug Tenable fan in the world, and like one Comic-Con. Mike went with me out to Comic-Con specifically to meet Doug Tenable because he was there signing books and doing art and stuff like that. And we met Doug Tenable, and he was like the nicest guy. He actually gave us some of his exhibitor passes to like run around, and he was just like the sweetest dude. And, you know, the creator of Earthworm Jim and just a lot of other gear and a lot of really fun comics and stuff too. But he has a very distinct style that is present in Armacrog.
Yeah, and I think... you know, I got an opportunity to review this game, and I think my only regret is that I don't know more about the artist. You know, like I kind of feel like I'm playing a video game for a TV show that I've never seen before, and
right.
I just wish I, you know, was more familiar with his work. But that being said, I can talk about the game part, which I actually found to be really interesting. It's a you know, it almost feels like a classic, you know, 80s or 90s point and click adventure game. It is described as a spiritual successor to a game called The Neverhood, which I think came out in the 90s and was also a point and click adventure, had a similar art style. The art style is like a clay animation art style.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that the entire game is claymation, if you will, but the characters are clay and it is used in creating the animations, which are, you know, then part of the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's not like it's not like Clay Fighter. It's not that obvious, I guess.
Clay Fighter.
Yeah. It's not quite like that.
Oh, when is that gritty reboot coming back?
I know. It's way overdue. But I always like to talk about these adventure games on the scale of like practicality to kind of weird abstractness as far as the puzzle goes. And this one definitely falls on the side of the puzzles being a little bit more bizarre, you know, in terms of what you need to figure out how to do. Which is, you know, not necessarily my preference, but I don't think it's so inaccessible that you can't figure out what to do. So ultimately the game I feel like is not super long, but it was a, you know, like an indie game, a Kickstarter game. I think maybe took me, I don't know, around 6 to 8 hours to complete the game, you know, trying to see everything that there is to see. But it follows the story of, I guess, these three astronauts, but you know, they're weird claymation characters. And one of them survives the journey and crash lands on a planet called Spiro 5, and then winds up in a fortress, which is called Armacrog. And so now he needs to figure out like what he needs to do to escape the fortress and continue his mission. He has a dog as a companion who works into the gameplay by being able to do things that the main character cannot do. So I think that the game has a lot of great ideas. I guess my only, you know, I don't even want to call it a complaint, is that like, there's some animated sequences that are cutscenes, you know, and obviously it's the, you know, you can tell it's the artist's style and everything. And I just wish that there were more opportunities to show stuff like that, because when you get to see a cutscene, it's really incredible. And then, you know, like you kind of go back to playing the game and there's not like the narrative is not very strong when you're actually doing the puzzles. So, I just wish that I could have seen sort of more into the mind of the creator of the game. And so the only other thing that I would say that is kind of weird about this game being on console is that the controls are pretty much adapted from the PC version, which were intended for a mouse pointer. So when you're playing the game, you're basically using the controller as the mouse pointer, and there's no way to control your characters directly. You're basically doing a point and click style, and I wish that there were native controls for the Xbox. But that being said, I would recommend the game, you know, mostly to fans of you know, the artist Doug Tenapel, or, you know, people that like those kind of like weird esoteric point and click adventure games. And then, you know, it's an indie title as well. So if you're looking for something different with a unique art style and just want to try something new, I think Armacrog is a good, something good to dip into, just to sort of experience something that's not a lot like what's out there now.
Well, I mean, from art house game to another art house game, let's talk about the little unheard of Titanfall 2.
It was a great segue.
Yeah, Titanfall 2. So I missed the first beta stress test last weekend, but got into the second beta stress test. Hold on, what the hell's happening?
Is that you, or is it Scott? What was that?
I don't know what's going on.
I hear
on.
Music.
Where is it coming from?
If you're happy and you know it.
I don't know where that music came from. Anyway, Titanfall 2 beta stress test.
Yeah, so I did play the first weekend and this weekend. So I was part of the crew that got to play where you only gained Titan growth hormone or whatever the thing is called.
It's a great description of the game.
Via killing other people.
Oh, okay.
It was brutal. I have a lot of feelings about this beta test we did. Some positive, some negative. I think you guys only played for a short while, right?
Yeah, a couple hours.
Yeah, just an hour or two, yeah.
I mean, I don't honestly know if I played that much longer than a few hours. Probably, God, I don't know, off and on for 2 weekends I played. I'll start with the positive, because we always like to start with the positive. I think the game looks really good for a beta stress test, whatever that is. It ran, like, buttery smooth. Like, there were... I was having zero issues. I don't know if you guys ran into any technical issues, but like there were no glitches. I was not getting booted. That didn't take forever to get into games. Like it ran very smoothly for me. Did you guys have that same experience?
I did. I felt the exact same thing. It looked great. I didn't have any connectivity issues at all. You know, matchmaking seemed to work well for the most part. And, you know,
I did end up in a lot of the same. I ended up in a lot of the same crews. It didn't seem like it was switching up a ton. Like it seemed like once you got grouped, you were kind of just with that group.
Yeah, I was in like a group with like a whole clan. Like it was like a whole bunch of guys with the same tag, and there was like me just getting like murdered haphazardly as like a level one, and I was like, "What did I do to deserve this?"
Why does this seem like people are already good at this game?
Oh, dude, holy shit! Like it was immediate. Like I started playing a week ago Saturday. I think the first time I turned it on was like at 4 p.m. or something. And like Ash's wife and my wife were there. They were just kind of hanging out talking. And I was like, oh, I'm going to play for a little bit if we're not going anywhere. And I turned it on and like, I was already dealing with like pro level Titanfall 2 players. I was like, how? This game's only been available for like, I guess 16 hours if you count from midnight, but like, good Lord. It was immediate. It was insane.
Yeah.
It's kind of brutal.
So the changes that I noticed, and I want to be, you can correct me if I am wrong. I didn't see how to do this. The loadout changed, right? Do we not have a sidearm anymore? Am I not crazy?
I couldn't figure out how to get to it. Yeah, I didn't see the sidearm. There's like a primary weapon and then a secondary weapon.
And the secondary weapon was your anti-Titan weapon.
Right, right. Yeah. So I don't know if there are sidearms and you just have to be able to kit yourself.
I don't I didn't see it. So I'll put it that way. I did not see a sidearm. They didn't tutorial me into seeing one in the hours that I played. It was the basic guns, which all felt great again. And then the anti-Titan weapons, which I am speaking with zero knowledge of any source, but they felt nerfed. Did they feel nerfed to you guys?
I just played with the default character class, and I thought the weapon was okay. I actually thought the Titans were the ones that were a little weak.
Really?
Yes.
I will tell you this. Once somebody got into a Titan in almost every game I was in, they weren't coming out of that Titan unless you really, like, you had to be in another Titan that just cornered them with, like, one or two Titans to get them out of it. Like, so the thing that got me was that my weapon didn't feel super strong. It didn't feel terrible, but it didn't feel like I had a lot of threat towards a Titan with my weapon.
Right.
And then the thing that really, really, really bummed me out was they changed how rodeoing works, which was one of my favorite things in the first Titanfall, which is that you could run and jump on an enemy Titan. You would basically be able to grenade the Titan and then just like unload on it with your gun and like not get off.
Yeah.
Now the way it works is you jump on, you pull an energy core, and you immediately jump back off.
Oh.
And then you have to jump back on again, and then you grenade him, and then you jump back off. And then you have to jump back on again, and then you can unload. I think then you can unload with your gun, or you grenade them again, or something along those lines. Each time, you're only able to take off one bar of Titan life.
Oh, I actually put energy cores into my friendly Titans a couple of times.
Yeah, you can do that too, because you can pick them up while you're running around. So when you yank an energy core from one of the enemy Titans, it'll be on the ground. You can pick it up, and then you reuse it on another Titan.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting mechanic change, but yeah, so it makes it impossible to just be like the badass bringing down Titans very, very quickly.
It's not even I don't feel like it ever brought them down super quickly. I just felt like it made it okay if you didn't have your Titan. Like, this was rough. Like, this was really, really rough for me. I was getting murdered a lot. I backed out of doing, which I'm assuming is where you guys played and got killed a lot, which is the, what was the, not hard point, but the other one.
This is a bounty hunt.
Bounty hunt.
Yeah.
I stopped playing that one because it just was like I would last 3 seconds and then die again and last 3 seconds and die again. Like it was pointless. I just was like, well, I'm not doing anything in this game. I'm just dying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I switched to Hardpoint at that point and found it to be the game that we enjoyed the first time again, which is like there was some tacticalness to it. You could find different paths to get to where you were going. But I also felt like, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, I didn't really read a lot about it. It felt sort of, and again, I don't play this game, but it felt a little like they took some notes from League of Legends as far as there appear to be very defined paths about how to get around these maps that are like done in a way that when you play hardpoint, the hardpoints are spread out to where you don't have to. If you're in a Titan, you have to go down certain roads because you can't, you know, obviously wall run and jump and all that kind of stuff. Right. But if you ended up on one of those roads as a regular guy, you would get murdered like immediately. So yeah. You had to like find these weird roundabout paths to get to stuff because you wouldn't survive. It was insane. So I don't know. It felt very chaotic. I felt very like uneven. And granted, these are a lot of things that they could balance out. From what I understand, they switched the first weekend you couldn't get a Titan unless you killed people. That's how you earned your Titan power. And in the second weekend, supposedly they had already switched it to, I didn't really notice, but they had already switched it to be time-based and kill-based. So if you killed, you got bonus ones, but you were still charging. Yeah. That was how the first one was they switched it. So yeah, I don't know. Those were my initial impressions. That the rodeoing thing was the biggest thing to me. Cause you guys remember probably that was like, I would always yell and have a ton of fun when that happened. Even when I died doing it, like it just was very a fun thing to do. And now it feels very like, okay, I did it once to this guy. Now I have to run off and then run back and then do it again to this guy. And then I have to run off and come back. Like it felt very rote all of a sudden, where it was like, I had to create basically what it felt like was they were like, well, we have to kind of mine in on that hardcore shooter stuff that wasn't necessarily what attracted me to the game in the first place.
I mean, the only thing I'll say to that is that if nobody was there to help you, there was no way to get that person off your back, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Unless you had, like, the cloud or something like that. But the thing that I noticed is that, like, first of all, I really like that grappling hook because I enjoy sort of the, you know, what I thought Titanfall brought, you know, in addition to the Titans is the ability to be mobile as a, you know, as a human. And, you know, so I actually went through that training course, like the little time-based course, like many times.
How low did you get?
I got to like, I want to say like 50 seconds, something like that.
Ooh, wow.
I didn't crack a minute. I think I was like a 102 when I finally gave up and done.
But I mean, like I really had fun with that and I practiced a lot. And then I get into a bounty hunt match and it's like a wide open field with like a couple of buildings. And I'm like, where am I supposed to run and use my grappling hook? So I'm really hoping to see it, like some of those levels from the original Titanfall where it was just tight corridors and lots of like verticality and ways for you to really show off your parkour skills. I'd really like to see that again. So
which is maybe what I felt in the hardpoint thing. Like it just felt very laned all of a sudden. Like everything felt like there was the middle lane, the left lane and the right lane. And then if you were like not in a Titan and you really wanted to go balls out, you could like run all the way around the map to get to like the other hard point that you needed to go get.
Yes.
Which I ended up doing a lot cause I didn't really care. So Ash, what were your initial opinions of Titanfall?
It's funny. I definitely mirror a lot of what you guys were saying. I think most of the qualms I had were more due to me being bad at the game.
Right.
I mean, it's weird. I've been playing mainly mouse and keyboard since like April. And I haven't really played an FPS with a controller since April. So it was weird going back and I felt terrible. Like I just wasn't fast anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of my big problems with it. And it's strange. And I felt, I don't want to say the opposite of what Matt felt, but I felt when I was in the Titan, I was so bad that like, I would die instantaneously. And then other people were really like great at just staying alive in the Titan. And honestly, I would stay alive for maybe 20 or 30 seconds. And like, I'd unload like my whole magazine and do like this special laser. And like the other guy would still be alive somehow. And then he'd just come up and like two shot me. And I'd be like, what am I doing wrong here?
No, so I 100% agree with that because I was soft as shit in a Titan. Like when I was in a Titan, I died. I would just jump out of it and let it run around by itself and like do other things because I was just dying constantly. But everybody else, it's like they had some weird magic combination with their Titan that I did not understand that they could sit in it forever.
Right. So that was a little weird. I did like, you know, I always like the fact that there's AI included in the Titanfall games and that there's robots. And and specters and all sorts of cool stuff running around the maps. I think that's really fun, and I think it gives you something to do when you're not hunting other players. Again, since this was, I think, this morning that I played, and it's a Sunday, and it's nearing the end of the second little stress test, players were just really, really good. And and I was just getting my neck broken like every 35 seconds, you know, just somebody popping up behind me, snapping my neck. So I feel like it's still Titanfall. It's still a ton of fun. There's still that magic to it, but there's just something that was a little different this time. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because I've been, you know, playing a ton of Overwatch, and that has a very different feel, and that could very well be it. But I don't know. I don't know if it's going to make me play it over and over again.
Yeah. I don't think that's it, because like I was having the same, I just was playing and I was like, man, just something feels different. And I don't know if I like it or not. You know, it's not as an immediate sale, I guess. Yeah,
I think that I would like to play a multiplayer shooter game again that doesn't require me to have like esport caliber skills to play.
Right.
And is not also like dramatically influenced by esports, you know, in the design of levels and gameplay.
That's going to be hard, man. I honestly think that it's so strange, because I think that is such a big thing now that it's going to be hard for shooters to not have that influence. You know what I mean?
I know, but I don't want to stream my game. I just want to jump online with you guys and have fun. You know, that's really all I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so final thoughts on Titanfall 2 beta stress weekend 2.
I mean, I think that technically it seemed like a success. You know, everything held up very well. They did stuff. They even reacted to the community pretty quickly between a week, you know. But there were just little things that, like, I will almost definitely still get this probably on release. But it would depend on where we're at with Gears and whether you guys are playing the other games more, mm-hmm. I think. If it would sway my opinion, I guess.
Yeah, I'm still excited for this game. I'm personally interested in the single player campaign, and I'm just going to say it. I miss Abby Heppy's voice in the game.
Sure. I do too.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I will say single player, I'm a little worried that it's going to like Halo 5 it or whatever, where it's going to be like a 3-hour campaign that we're like, oh, okay.
Well, I mean, the story in the first Titanfall was so solid, you know,
there was like a guy who was Australian and he was like real mad about stuff.
No, I'm again in the same camp as you guys. I'm excited to pick it up and give it a shot. I think one of the good things about having a campaign this time, I think, is that it will help you hone your skills. Like, it's almost like an extended tutorial for multiplayer most of the time. So by the time you actually get to the multiplayer, you're not absolutely terrible, right?
Yes.
So I think that's going to be helpful. And I think a lot of the UI and a lot of the things that were confusing to me this time, because they were so different, will again make more sense after playing through the single player campaign. So, I didn't really know like what the icons meant or like, you know, what this ability was going to be. So I think, you know, spending more time with it is going to really, I think, help the experience just be a little bit more cohesive, at least.
I was legitimately bummed that I felt like they got rid of the sidearm, and because I felt like I couldn't carry a sniper rifle, essentially, although you can hip shot that thing now, which is weird. But I was legitimately bummed at first, and then I was like, wait, do I just not know how to get to my sidearm? Which is still feasibly possible.
If it was there, I couldn't find it either, because I tried that sniper as well, and I was like, oh, this feels like a fun gun. I like the way it felt, but then I was just like, I don't have any sidearm at all, or I didn't have an anti-Titan weapon either. I don't know if I did something wrong, but people that played a lot of this are probably calling me an idiot.
They're probably all laughing at us. They're all laughing. That should be the title of this episode.
They're all laughing at us. Perfect.
Yeah, they probably are. So all right. Are we done?
We're done.
I think so.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 243 of the Rated NA podcast. The number keeps getting bigger, but we keep getting smaller. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's @NerdAppropriate. You can send us all an email, and that's Matt, Scott, or Ash @NerdAppropriate.com. Or if you have a general question, that's nerds@NerdAppropriate.com. We have a YouTube channel, which is /NerdAppropriate, Facebook/NerdAppropriate, and of course, Twitch.tv/NerdAppropriate. And I will be out at PAX the week that this comes out, so please send me a message there. Come say hi. I'll be running around until think Monday the 7th or Monday the 8th, somewhere around there. But come say hi, and we'll be back next week with some PAX shit.
Yeah.
Wow, excellent.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Right.
Are we done?
We're done.
I think so.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 243 of the Rated NA podcast.
Ash sounded so exasperated when he said, "Are we done?" By the way,
are we done?
Are we done?